Clear the screen, shift the scene. You're the writer of this dream. Let go of fear, let go of doubt. Stop playing the version that pulls you out. Clear the screen, clear the noise. Choose again, you've got the choice. The story changes when you see. Anxiety came to set you free.
Welcome back to another episode of the Clear the Screen podcast. I am Melissa Dealey, your host, and
I am Billy Admi,
our other host. And today we are so thrilled to have Jan Jansen on the show. Welcome to the show, Jan.
Oh, thank you, Melissa and Billy. It's so awesome to be here.
And I just want to introduce you, Jan, to the audience. So I'm going to read a little bit of your bio here before we dive into the episode. Jan Jansen is the decision queen, the creator of the Unmaybe Code and the Hell Yes Rule. For over four decades, she's helped soul-driven entrepreneurs break free from the maybe zone, make bold, aligned decisions, and lead with confidence. After being homeless twice, building six-figure businesses, and navigating both boardrooms and back roads around the globe, Jan knows firsthand that success doesn't come from having all the answers. It comes from deciding. Blending sharp business strategy with spiritual clarity, Jan shows her clients how to cut through hesitation, trust their gut, and make decisions that stick. The result? They stop second-guessing, start charging what they're worth, and create the kind of impact and income they've always wanted without compromise. I absolutely love that, Jan. And, you know, I've known you for over 5 years now. Love you to pieces. And I know that you've faced some big turning points in your life and your business. Can you just start us off by sharing one of your most defining moments when you realized you simply had to choose?
This is a big one, Melissa, because I had been in a very, I call it a cult or a high level control religion for 38 years. And I realized that I didn't want to be there anymore. That's a big decision when that's where all your friends are. That's been the foundation of your life. My husband was also in the cult with me. We made all of our decisions based on the fact that Armageddon was always just around the corner. And so the decisions were made for me in every area, from what I could wear, literally what I could wear, what medical treatments I could have, and even what birth control I could use as a married woman. Every day we live like Armageddon might arrive tomorrow. And so that meant that long-term decisions were discouraged because it didn't align with the cult's dogma that the end of the world was just around the corner. So I could decide inside their rules, but real-world decisions, they just didn't exist. So when I made that really tough decision to escape for my freedom, that's when it got interesting, because suddenly I had to decide about things I'd never been allowed to before. And then my husband decided that he didn't want to be married to me anymore. So now I was even more in a strange situation because I had to make decisions on my own. And then homelessness came, that's a big word, homelessness came a second time with my credit cards confiscated to avoid bankruptcy. And so decision-making, I really had to learn how to do it and to do it well.
And to go from not making any decisions to now all of a sudden having to make all the decisions for yourself. What was the timeline of that? Because I'm just sitting here thinking, listening to this, going, just even the decision about opening a bank account, things that the rest of the world takes for granted as regular daily decisions would have been brand new for you, and you would have been faced with decisions that, you know, you had no idea about before.
I didn't have a clue about so many things. And so it was a real eye-opener for a lot of my friends. They found it quite amusing. As I started to make friends, they actually found me quite funny, because things that they automatically knew how to do, I didn't. So I would say it was a good 2 years of coming into a knowingness about things that I should have known. I mean, everybody else did, but I didn't.
So you got your adulting 101 at age 38, as opposed to age 18 or even 16 or whatever age most people get it at.
You know, I was just having a podcast with someone else, and I felt like I said to her, I was like, you know what? Most people learn in their teenage years. I felt like I learned in my 20s and my 30s because I was so sheltered, right? Mine was, you call it a cult. Mine was, you know, just the traditions, the family cultures, right? They keep you small. And so, yeah, you know, the life lessons, the life skills that we need sometimes are kept from us, specifically women, right? I mean, in my culture as well. And, you know, Jan, that Melissa and I teach moving from Victim Island to Solution City. And, you know, you talk about like the maybe factor, right? A lot of people get stuck in the maybe, like, well, what if? What was the catalyst that finally got you off Victim Island and now living in Solution City? Or was there like one catalyst that moved you from that hesitation into being that decisive person that you are now?
I would definitely say that being homeless was really tough because I had been raised in a very well-to-do environment. And so being homeless and not knowing where I was going to sleep and having to stay with friends or remember sleeping on the basement floor of someone's home, that was really tough. And it was humbling, to put it mildly. And it was a real wake-up call, as you would say, Melissa, because if things aren't going well for you, I mean, really not well for you, and you're looking in the mirror every morning and going, oh my goodness, is this how I'm going to live the rest of my life? And you're scared. And when that fear comes in, as you guys well know, then nothing's really working properly inside your brain. So you're now also not just fighting indecision and uncertainty, but you're also facing a huge amount of fear. But I really believe, Billy, that it happened when I was on someone's couch for the second time and thinking, this is really crazy. And then my husband, he said, he found one day, he got a hold of me. He asked me to pay for half the payment of the cost of a vasectomy reversal with his new wife. And I have to say, that was really kind of the craziest thing. I'm going, are you kidding? And yet he was really serious. And I thought, wow, I really need to get my stuff together and I need to move on. Because I do not want to be having these kinds of conversations. And I need a whole new group of people in my world.
You've got so many incredible stories, Jan. And just as you're talking about moving on, and was there a moment where you literally felt your identity shift so profoundly that you knew that you could just never go back to the old way of thinking or living?
I would really say that it happened. The trip that I made to South Africa was a turning point in my life. And that, I think it was a turning point for a couple of reasons. One was that I was there as a volunteer in a very small village called Nzumbe. And it was tough seeing the situation, obviously coming from a developed country and then going to a small village in South Africa. It was tough to see the situation for people. And it made me realize that I had a huge amount of potential. I had just been ordained as a minister again, not now with the first religion, but I was now a metaphysical minister. And that's really about you create your life. And it's not a whole thing about the devil's out to get you or God is blessing you or this is the right path or this is the wrong path. We are creating our life every minute of the day. And when I really got that because of the fundamental principles that I now knew, and I was hobnobbing with some really cool people like politicians and ministers and government. And it was an amazing experience because I realized that I could have massive impact in countries like South Africa if I could just get some of the issues that I needed to work on, when a big one was financial, and to really take charge of my life again and decide what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. And that was the first time that I really, really sat down and said, so who do you want to be, Jan Jansen? Because if you don't want to be this, who do you want to be?
I love that you brought in this whole spiritual conversation to this because, you know, a lot of us think, and I used to be that person, that spiritual is just woo-woo, right? It's just the made up. It's something you believe in. And really, these are the laws of the universe. And, you know, Melissa and I teach that, you know, the law, it's a law for a reason. It's not, you can choose to believe in the law of attraction or not, right? It's just like gravity. If you choose not to believe in the law of gravity, you're going to get hurt, right? So it's the same thing. If you don't choose to believe in these laws, this life is just going to be a little bit more difficult for you. So now that you've integrated, you know, like you said, these fundamental principles in your life, how has it grown your business with in a way that you couldn't have done if you just had used this, you know, what we call the conscious mind, just that conscious effort on its own?
I think there's something that happened before that, because I'm now coming back to work after a hiatus, Billy. My second husband ended up getting very, very sick, and he passed away almost 3 years ago. That was probably another really pivotal moment, because when you watch someone that you love get very sick and die a very excruciating and horrible death, you realize that we're all going to die, and you start to think about your legacy. And I know that Greg left a lot of his life mission unfulfilled because he made some decisions that didn't really align with his path. But based on the fact that being a medical doctor in the US, he needed to conform to rules and to decisions that he didn't make, but he had vowed that he would fulfill and he would follow as a doctor. And when I saw the fear that he had in crossing over the boundaries, that was a real wake-up call for me as well. Because there are all sorts of rules that we are expected to conform to. And when people expect you to do this and that, and they may not resonate with you and they may not align with your values. And yet we often decide to not rock the boat or not to ruffle feathers because we want to keep the peace. But that's not the way to live a hell yes life. I ruffle feathers probably every day and I rock the boat constantly.
I love this. It's going to lead into this next question that we have is, you know, and I totally resonate with all that you're saying. Because again, I was a police officer for 20 years. We had to, you know,
yeah.
A system, right? And the system we know is just not meant for helping people heal and grow, right? Same thing in the medical system as well. And so, I mean, you teach this hell yes rule. How does that principle help you filter opportunities, relationships, and projects so that your life stays aligned? Because alignment is so important in order for us to fulfill our mission.
It comes back to living a life with no regrets. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've seen now enough people pass. And they have regrets and they think, well, I wish I had done that. And it isn't about what they usually did do. It's almost always about what they didn't do.
Yeah.
Because they made a decision to not fully exercise or to fully use the abilities that they had. And they usually played small because it was safer and it felt more comfortable. And then you end up with regrets. So when you're living that hell yes life, my attitude, it's either a hell yes or it's a hell no. There isn't this maybe trap where you can say, well, you know, maybe I could do that, but maybe I could do this. And then you stay in that maybe trap for a long time. It's either hell yes or hell no. And if you're not a hell yes, like if it's not like, yeah, I just know it, like that abdominal brain, that gut intuition that says yes, then it's a hell no. It's not a maybe. It's either yes or no. And I think that makes all the difference in the world, which is why I created the unmaybe code, because people love to languish in this land called maybe. Oh, maybe I'll do that. And it feels safe. But it's not safe because indecision is a decision. It's a decision to stay stuck. So it's not safe and you're not going to get anywhere, but it feels in the moment like it's the best place to be. And that's a big, big mistake.
Absolutely. And as you've said, so many people are there. And I want to highlight what you said, that indecision is a decision. And I really want people to hear that, because I know the first time I heard that, it landed and I realized, okay, let's start making decisions as you teach. And I love your hell yes rule and your unmaybe code in helping people move forward. And all of us are aligned in our work in helping people move forward. So another area where we're all aligned is in ministry and mission. And you've already talked about, you know, the spirituality, and you have beautiful spiritual insight. your entrepreneurial leadership and your women's empowerment are all big focuses in your life. How do you see those pieces amplifying each other in your mission?
I found a quote many years ago, and I love this quote, Melissa, and it is from the Harvard Business Review. And it says, it is no exaggeration to say that female entrepreneurs have the power to change the world. Now, you got to love that.
Yeah.
And so my attitude is that I love men, and it's not, no, we're not, you know, dissing men, but women have just qualities that men don't have. And having spent 9 years traveling the world, mostly in underdeveloped countries, I saw horrific suffering of women and children and animals. And so my whole goal was to empower the women that do live in first world countries that have so many opportunities that we take for granted, so that we can become more wealthy and have the money to make a difference in the world where women don't have the ability to make massive amounts of money. And if we did that, the world would be a very different place. The children would be raised in a different environment. They would be healthier. We could change literally the families, the communities, industries. We would change the world. But women entrepreneurs here in North America and in developed countries need to step up to the plate and make a decision that they want to be wealthy. And that's a tough one for women to say. Like, do you want to be a millionaire? And you can just almost see the color drain out of their face because they've never thought of it. It's never been encouraged. We don't talk about it because it's not nice to talk about money. It's not nice to talk about those things. But it is. It's not only just nice. It's important. And it's the only thing that's going to really change this world is if we had a lot more females in an entrepreneurial position we are in, that we're writing our paycheck. That's who has the opportunity right now to make a massive difference if we would decide to do it.
I love that. And so often people think it's greedy to be talking about making a lot of money. And it isn't. When we talk about making a lot of money, it just simply opens up opportunities to be able to do more with that money, as you're talking about, and be able to give back and be able to lift up others with the opportunities that we have in the first world to be able to make that money.
And I have a really good example of that. Greg and I spent several months in El Salvador, in rural El Salvador, and this was before the new president, who's really made some massive changes. This is still when El Salvador was a pretty dangerous country. And we were staying in a little house on property, and we had a caregiver family, and we got to know them really well. Because I had been a missionary in Ecuador, I speak fluent Spanish, so it was easy for me to communicate. And I saw the animals were hungry, and that was really sad and hard to take, and that the children were not getting enough protein. They were eating a lot of tortillas and things like that. And so Greg and I made a decision that we would help support that family. And to this day, I still help support that family. We built them a house. They were able to put all their kids through school with a proper diet. We made sure that the animals were fed. The cat that I fell in love with, that was back in 2016, is still alive. Well, you probably know that that doesn't happen in a developing country. So the fact that this cat is still alive and looks good, that's a huge testament to the fact that they are now, it's a whole different world. Those kids got an education that they would never, ever have had if they had to go to school hungry every day. They're tall, they're robust, they're beautiful, they're intelligent. And now this generation has an opportunity to make a massive difference in their community. Their families will be much different, all because Greg and I were able to do what we did. And it wasn't that it was a huge amount of money. It was just that we made the decision and we followed through with it over a number of years.
Yeah. It's that ripple effect, right?
That ripple effect.
And, you know, as you're on the board with Girls Matter, with, you know, Melissa's nonprofit, where, you know, you can change one person's life and imagine how many lives that one person can change. And then all the people that they change, the ripple effect of that. And, you know, coming back to money, like, you know, Melissa and I always tell our students, like, let money be the symbol of your service in the world. The more money you have, it should be because that you're serving more of humanity. And that's really what our mission is about, is that's why we called it Amplify Impact Academy. Was how can you amplify impact? So how have your clients that you work with, Jan, how have they been amplifying their impact in the world? And can you share maybe a story of someone that you've worked with?
Yes, I can think about someone who comes from a really challenging family environment, very, very difficult. And by working on the power of decision and really that making decisions that were important to her and not necessarily fit in with the family idea of what they wanted. And now today, she is doing amazing work. She has gone from being a virtual assistant to a managerial position in a company that I think she's going to end up being the COO of that company, I really do. And that is a lot of that is because of the work that we have done on believing in yourself, then making a decision, going for something, even though you may think, well, I can't do that, or that's too big for me. Do you want it? Like, really, that's the question. Is that what you want? And we're so used to minimizing and playing small that we might think, well, I want this, but I'll just downsize it a little bit and make it feel more manageable or not quite so grandiose, or I don't really want to be noticed or out there. If that's what your heart and soul is calling you to do, then you'll never be happy unless you follow that calling. Yeah. It's there for a reason. And I believe that the universe puts that calling in there because you are capable of it. It doesn't give you an assignment that is too big for you. It will give you an assignment that you may need to stretch for, but you can do it. And seeing this person do that has been such a joy to me, because it is having a massive ripple effect. And I also see the happiness and the peace that she now has, because she knows that she's living dream. She's living the life she knows. She's using the intelligence she has. Right. And that to me is so exciting.
I mean, really, that's all it is coming back to who you are as a person before life told you who you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what we say, like, you know, we're wanting to get back to that beautiful magnificence of what your soul and what your mission was, and all these limiting beliefs that got put on top. And, you know, that conversation, and I can relate to that client that you're speaking of, is that, you know, being brought up in a traditional Eastern family and being told, well, you know, women aren't independent, women aren't successful, women aren't entrepreneurs. And as I finally started looking back on my life, I'm like, oh, no wonder all these businesses I started never completed or became successful, because my programming told me, well, Billy, you're not supposed to be successful. And then something would sabotage it. And now really stepping into, who's that voice that's saying that I can't do that? Is it mine? Because it won't be. Right? Because our own voice never tells us that we're small. It's somebody else's voice. Now figure out who that was, and now get that voice out of your head and get your voice back in. What's your soul meant to do? And what is your mission, your purpose? We talk about this all the time, that if your soul is being lit on fire, and like Melissa and I, we can talk about this stuff all day, every day. So we know for 100% where we're meant to be. Right? And that's why Melissa and I were like, oh, here you are. Let's get to work. Come on, let's go. And when you find that, that's when life flows, and the voices aren't as loud anymore of, you know, like where you came from, Jen, that you know, literally were taught to fear life, right? We're taught the fear of God, when really God should not be feared at all, right? Well, you know, as you know, like we're big into the spiritual. We love Dolores Cannon and Neil Donald Walsh. I've been listening to the complete conversations with God, and I'm like, you guys, we've been doing it all wrong. We have been doing it all wrong. So I want to talk about like breaking these patterns, Jan. You know, you've taught about procrastination and you've taught about excuses, the high cost of indecision for decades. So what patterns do you see most often? And what's the first step that you believe in breaking them?
I think the most common one, Billy, is procrastination, because people have been brainwashed into thinking that procrastination, well, they'll call it, I'm being careful, or I'm being prudent, or I don't want to rush things. And they'll make all sorts of excuses that sound lovely and pretty and nice and clean. And it's like, it's all nice and tidy. But procrastination is really a decision. And it's the decision to fail, because if you don't make that decision, you can't move ahead. So it feels like you're in that safe zone, but you really couldn't be in a greater place of danger. Because if you don't make a decision, something or someone will make a decision for you. And then you'll hear people complain, you know, it just happened and I had no control. Well, you actually did.
Yeah.
You had control. You just didn't take it. Right. You could have made a decision and you chose not to. So that was your decision. You chose not to make a decision and you chose to allow other people to determine your life and to drive your bus. And if that's happening, then at the end of your days, what kind of regret are you going to have? So I think procrastination is, I have a whole program on procrastination because I think there really is no such thing as procrastination. It's can be a number of things. But the primary reason is that people just don't make a decision because they don't know how. And they don't feel comfortable and they've never been taught. That's why I do it.
And to add to that, so that people understand the physical aspect of not making a decision on their body. And if it's a big decision that they're stuck with, and let's face it, that's generally where people are choosing not to make a decision and staying stuck. They're in amygdala hijack. And when we're in the state of amygdala hijack, when the brain's firing, going, do I make this decision or not? Or do I say yes or do I say no? That's putting us into fight or flight. That's putting us into our stress state. That's having cortisol and adrenaline firing through our body. And when we sit in that, it becomes chronic. And that is the reason for, you know, 97% of all doctor's visits and, you know, over 60% of all disease. And sometimes it's literally coming down to someone's inability to make a decision because they, as you said, haven't been taught. And so I love that you teach people how to do this because I can think of people in my life, you know, adult friends in their 60s who still cannot make a decision. And it's funny because their kids are waiting for them to make a decision and their kids are friends with my kids. And so it's delaying things. The ripple effect of a non-decision is also impacting many people in a negative way.
And that's actually a really good point, Melissa, is that indecision is a decision, right? We've decided that. And it does, it not only has an effect on us, but it is the ripple effect. And people can see, as you look down the road, you can see how having not made a decision, how it has affected your life and how it's affected other people's lives, because they can't move ahead if you don't make a decision. And especially if you're an entrepreneur or a parent in a place of leadership, if you can't make a decision, you are so hooped. It's not even funny because nobody can make a decision then. And then you don't have a business and you don't even have a life because a life is based on decisions. You have to make decisions if you're going to live a life worth living.
Right.
Even if it takes until you're 38 years old to learn how to make a decision, right? It's never too late.
It's never too late.
I love that. And so, Jen, I know that having learned how to make a decision, having now traveled the world and experienced so much in terms of seeing how people in underdeveloped countries live, that you do have a big heart and a big mission of giving back. What does amplify your impact mean to you right now? And what daily practices do you keep in order to stay in that amplified state for yourself?
I think people live a very shallow life for the most part. It's filled with all sorts of non-essentials and things that they have deemed important. But I believe that's a mask, or it's really a mask. And it's a way of getting out of making these decisions because they're uncomfortable making decisions. And so when they stay in this place of indecision and just drift along here or there and don't make the decisions that could have a massive impact not only on themselves, but on their family, on their community, and a bigger picture on the world. So showing up fully for both me and for myself and then the people that I'm here to help, that's what it's all about. That's the only way that you're going to amplify your life, amplify your impact, and die a life with no regrets. Is you absolutely have to make those decisions because that's the foundation of everything.
I've heard you say a quote before, and I'm throwing you under the bus here because you might not have it right in front of you. However, just you saying living the full life, You know the quote I'm talking about?
Hunter Thompson.
Yes. Share it.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Hunter Thompson. It's that whole thing of living a life of no regrets and at the end, you know, saying, whoa, what a ride. Because at the end of the day, that's what I do not want to be in the place where my husband was. That's for sure. I want to be going out with a bang. And I think that that's the only way is having that whoa, what a ride, which means you're pushing buttons and you're pushing the limit and you're going to be uncomfortable making those kinds of decisions. This isn't the safe zone. You're out there, you're flying. And sometimes you think, gee, I don't have my wings on today, but you know, you're flying. And that's where I think it gets exciting, keeps me engaged and definitely interested and on point. And, you know, my dad's 102. I could have another almost 40 years ahead of me. So if I follow in his footsteps, and I even though I don't agree with my dad's dogma, I do agree with the fact that he did live a hell yes life. He lived a really fascinating life. And at 102, he's still going strong.
And I just want to say to you, not you could, you do have another 40 years in you as well.
Maybe, yeah, right? You have another 50.
Yeah, that too is a mindset and a decision, right?
Yes. Good point.
Jen, looking forward, if every woman you worked with this year made one powerful decision, what do you believe would change in her life, her business, and in her world?
When you learn to make decisions and start making powerful decisions, Billy, what I've seen happen is that you build a confidence that comes from within. It's not a confidence that someone has said, oh, you can do this, or you know, you're good. There's not, you're smart. You can do this. This comes from within. It's a knowingness at a gut level, at a cellular level, at a subconscious mind level, at a conscious mind level. In every cell of your body, you know that you can make a decision and you can do this. That level of confidence, that's priceless. Mm-hmm. So when that happens and you start to make these bigger decisions, and it's a learning process, you make bigger and bigger and bigger decisions, your bank account grows and you start to be able to do things like what we do with Girls Matter and to support other communities around the world in ways that most people today can't even imagine. They're struggling just to put food on their own table. This is a first world country, and yet they're struggling to pay the bills. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. And so the difference that it could make, not only for their lives, but then the impact on a global scale. And what I've noticed over decades of doing this is that people get so much joy out of helping others when they see the difference that they can make. Sometimes it means more than the difference they make in their own lives. And so I think that the ripple effect comes in here as well, because as we know, you change one family's life, it affects the generations to come. Knowing that when you're laying in your deathbed, I think there couldn't be anything any bigger. I want to be going out with a smile on my face and going, yeah, hell yes, what a ride. That was wild.
Love that.
Absolutely love that, Jen. And I want to come back to when you were in South Africa, because I remember another story that you've shared previously. When I believe you were at a concert or an event, and you were looking at the women there, and based on your programming, you were initially thinking it was odd or thinking negatively of them until you realized that you didn't have to think that way, and you changed your thinking and you decided to change your thinking. And I remember that being a pivotal moment in your life as well, and I would love for you to share that story.
It's a bit of a wild story, isn't it, Melissa? It was sports day in this little village. So I was never athletic, so sports day wasn't a day I look forward to. But sports day here in this little village, how they opened it was there was about a dozen young girls between maybe 12 and 14 that came out to dance, and they were all bare-breasted. They were topless. And I remember looking at it and going, holy moly, those girls don't have any tops on. And it was this total discomfort that just came over my entire body. I had only been out of the cult for about 5 years at the time. So I was still a bit of a virgin as far as how much of the world lived and experiencing things like this. And it was, I mean, I remember just sitting there and going, wow. And then I looked around and realized that nobody else was fazed by it. Nobody was fazed by it. I was the only one that thought this was a bit more than a bit unusual and abnormal and weird, and all kinds of things were going through my head and shocking. And then I just looked around and nobody else was fazed. And I thought, wow, that's the culture here. This is accepted. And it's okay. And get over it, Jan.
And I love that learning, the awareness that you had to look around and see and realize that's the culture and it's okay. And then deciding to go with that. And that's a huge part in our decision making and in our role in humanity, is to not be so stuck in our own programming, our own thinking, that we can't open up to the thinking of others, which again is everything that you teach. And I love how you bring your own real life examples to all of your teachings and trainings. So if someone listening to this podcast has loved everything that you've shared and they want to become a better decision maker, they want to step into the hell yes life, they want to learn the unmaybe code and get unstuck themselves, how can they get hold of you? What is the best way for them to reach out?
I would say right now that the best way to get a hold of me is at janjanson.com, and that will take you to the newest and the best place for you to start. And then you can go from there, because I not only teach decision making, but also how to then, once you've made those decisions and you get comfortable with it, then it's also about what I call unscripting, and unscripting the stories that you have been indoctrinated with and creating the life that you want. Because we make decisions not just for the moment, but we make decisions on a long-term basis. And it's those ones that sometimes are the hardest to make, because we have been so programmed into what our later years need to look like or should look like. And I think that that part of decoding and then also unscripting is super important, because you're not living your life. You are living the life that you have been indoctrinated in, and you were scripted for, and you were coded for. The way you see money, the way you see relationships, the way you see the world, the way you see your future, the way you see every single aspect of your life has been coded and scripted into you. And you didn't choose it. You didn't decide it. When you think about that, you are not living your life. You are living what someone else dictated to you at a very young age. And I think that's really sobering. And it certainly was a wake-up call for me when I realized that. And consequently, I have unscripted, and I continue to unscript every day and to decode every day and to make sure that I'm living the life I want to live. I'm living my hell yes life the way I want to. And I think every single person on this planet deserves that, Melissa.
And I absolutely love that. And Billy and I are in full agreement with everything that you've shared there. We always jokingly tell people your inner five-year-old is not qualified to run your adult life. And it's your five-year-old that's been programmed, and that you are still running that program because you haven't realized that you can update the program, because society doesn't tell us that either. So love, love, love that you offer this to people, because yes, we're all here to live our purpose and our mission, and let's go out and live it.
Uh-huh.
Because that's exactly truly thriving and able to amplify our impact for each and every day. So love all that you're doing. Such amazing stories, Jan. I love you to pieces. Thank you so much for being here on this show, for supporting the show, the book, and for all that you do each and every day in helping women, girls around the world and locally.
Well, thank you for all that you do. I certainly appreciate what work you do with Girls Matter and the work that you and Billy are doing in the Amplify Impact Academy. It's brilliant, and the world needs it. The world needs us. And that's why this message is so important to get out.
So thank you again for being here. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in and being open to learning about the power that we hold within, and to knowing that you too can shift.